Previously on Bad Heroes.
Iria pulls out her drum. Hey, we're all here for a reason. We're all semi-alive for a reason. Let's get back to that reason.
We are all here to kill Lord Oberon. I think on that we can all agree.
You were sent to capture a vampire?
Yes.
Well, leave me out of it, and I will leave you alone. I will see you when I see Oberon. Unlucky for him, I make a much better vampire than he does.
Iria, we need to tend to you.
Yeah, I was just looking at this coffin. It looks pretty comfy right now.
We have until dawn to get ourselves together.
The first door opens up into a really lavish, sweet bedroom.
Perhaps we should set up here and try to get some rest.
I think that's a great idea.
Wingeth is going to prowl around the room, checking every closet and under everything and looking for a coffin.
There is a coffin in this hidden chamber behind the bedroom.
You and Nyx take that torch and you light that coffin on fire.
And Lord Oberon turns his eyes back to home.
Here we are. Here we are. Five friends who can all count. Okay.
We have reconvened after a very long time, and we now sit in a new decade.
Oh, that's true. Welcome to 2020.
We're back in the 20s.
It's time for a plague, probably.
It's just apparently because in 920 there was one and 1020, or sorry.
1020
there was one.
Are you going to say all the 20s from BC onward?
It was 18 and 19, right?
It's time for the roaring 20s. It's time for bathtub gin and flappers.
Prohibition.
And prohibition.
In several years, we'll have another depression.
Yeah.
So Kaz, you're already in violation of prohibition.
Oh,
welcome to the speakeasy that is Bad Heroes. We have not recorded in 2 months, and we have possibly forgotten everything about how this game works. So this episode, we do not have Jake anymore. Jake's last episode was 13 because he had a baby, and he doesn't have time to play make-believe with us anymore. But we now have
the baby.
No, we're not playing with his baby. That would be... Baby, what do you do? Sounds good. Roll for it. Oh, she ate the dice. We now have Leanne, who is normally my co-producer and an editor of this show, but she is going to play Wingatha for a little while. She's going to play Wingatha for a little while.
You know what that means?
Insider knowledge.
She knows nothing.
Absolutely not.
So say hello, Leanne.
Hello.
Hello, Leanne.
Hello, Leanne.
Yeah, so I guess we're gonna just jump right in. Everybody good?
Yeah.
Sure.
Does everybody remember how to play this game? You need dice.
I got dice.
Okay. And you have a person that you are right now that isn't you.
Right.
So everybody, yep.
It's Will?
Yeah, we fire at Will.
That's Samantha?
Right. Samantha?
Samantha?
Samantha? I don't know, Samantha. Okay, anyway, we're done with the no more Frozen fan fiction. Okay.
Wow.
That wasn't fan fiction, that was real.
The no more Frozen reenact, that was real fiction. Okay. So, you three and Nyx were all, how many of there are you? There are four of you. You four. Wow, this is a profoundly cursed recording session.
It's going to be great. We have rested too much.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, I just got back from 10 days with Kaz, which I think Kaz was just stealing my brain cells.
Excuse me. Not all of that time was spent with me, so.
Yeah, some of it was with Liska. Uh-oh. Maybe you guys worked together.
Exactly.
Took a little piece. She took a little piece. Now you got nothing.
Little piece of my brain.
I need my brain back. Without the brain, I know can make the story go.
I lost it.
My brain?
Yep.
Well, I guess we'll have to make do with whatever part is left. So the four of you took a long rest, and you guys cannot see the dawn's light from your place deep underground, but some internal clock within you stirs, and you all have the distant feeling of morning. And you start waking up. Nyx is standing in the corner of the room, keeping watch. Tonrir is perched on top of the four-poster bed frame, bow in hand. Gideon is sitting on the floor meditating. And nearby, Iria is curled up on her bedroll, naked beneath Nyx's cloak. And Wingatha is sitting propped up in a chair adjacent to Nyx.
Cool. I guess I'll start us off. So he's probably got his forehead against his knees, and he's just been slowly stirring awake. His eyes flutter open almost abruptly, but quietly jerks his head up because he remembered where he was. All of that nice, nice dream has just disappeared because he's back in the castle for real now. So looks around and hops down just to do a quick look around and stretch.
At the sound of Tonrir hopping down and landing on the floor, Wingatha jerks awake, looks around from where she's seated, lifting her head from where it was resting on the great sword, and seeing that it's only Tonrir, slowly gets to her feet as well and stretches.
Gideon just opens her eyes peacefully, waking from her meditation, and then picks the book back up that was in her lap, The Vampire Compendium, and starts reading.
Of course.
Iria kind of stirs, but then just pulls Nyx's coat over. Is it a coat or a cloak?
Cloak.
Pulls Nyx's cloak up over her eyes and like settles back in to sleep more.
Okay. Once Tonrir hears the stirring from you, he's going to turn and look, and before you try to pass back out, ask, how are you feeling right now?
Better. Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better, actually. And Iria kind of like moves her shoulders and like moves around and checks things out. And she's like, yeah, actually, I feel pretty damn good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then he'll proceed over to the bathroom area to wash his late face if there's any water left, any fresh water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's water. The tap is enchanted to snag water from somewhere via, you know, teleportation magic. So yeah, you're getting fresh water. You're not sure exactly how fresh because you don't know exactly where it's coming from.
Some random villager and whatever is nearby is just like, where's all the water going?
Why is my well dry? What's happening? And Wingatha, I think you're up and you're stretching. And Nyx, who's looking at like a tiny little piece of paper in his hand, smiles at you and says, good morning. You look like shit.
I feel like shit.
Wingatha, you sound different. Like, not bad. It's not bad. I know you feel like shit, but you sound different.
Did you have a cold this whole time? A terrible cough, perhaps?
And then Wingatha coughs up a giant hairball.
Where did that come from?
Sorry.
What?
Well,
hold on.
Wait a minute.
What were you two doing?
Oh my.
Licking the
And that's why we're rated the way we are.
Oh god, it's true. So last episode, Wingatha found Oberon's coffin hidden behind what you can assume is his bedroom, and Wingatha and Nyx burned it. So that's what's up. So you now know that you are adjacent to Oberon's bedroom, where he presumably sleeps in his coffin, and you find yourself in the partner suite, which you guys can assume was designed for Thalia. But also based off of what you've read, you have the impression that he is on the hunt for a partner, and Thalia did not work out. You also know that he is throwing a masquerade. And you suspect that masquerade might be happening shortly. And you intuit that the purpose of that masquerade is actually to help him pick a partner. So that is where you guys are at. And as dawn approaches, Nyx has suggested before that once the sun comes up, Oberon is going to come home with the spawn that he's taken out with him. And that will be the perfect time to hunt him.
Cool. So Tonrir is going to finish washing up and he's going to come back out toward Nyx. And at this point, Tonrir's owl has probably come back into the room, sensing that everybody's awake. So the owl is now also in the room. Tanrir is going to look at Nixon and ask, so where do we expect that Oberon will be returning to? Is it going to be straight here, or will there be more courting in another part of this castle?
Nix kind of laughs and he says, well, I don't think Oberon is going to take all his suitors directly to his bedroom, do you?
I would hope not.
We haven't gleaned any kind of information from anything we've seen so far to know how he picks his suitors, right?
So what you found was an open invitation that you guessed was probably sent to known vampires or known vampire groups. It does look like he's looking for vampires specifically. So he's probably...
He's looking for someone who was already a vampire?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because that is, I mean, you can intuit that's the basically hitch he hit with Thalia, who he thought was his true love, mm-hmm. is that, you know, she was alive and he killed her and she didn't care for it. So... Well, he's now hoping to find someone who's dead.
He's learned his lesson.
How stuck up of her.
I know, have some flexibility.
Okay.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
How's the ventilation in this underground castle that we're burning things in?
Mediocre.
Is that magic too? Is there air being funneled in from somewhere?
No, it's pretty mediocre. I think maybe you guys closed the door and you were like...
So it's just smoky as hell. Is it an airtight door?
I mean, you have magic, don't you?
Okay, well, so we're waking up and the masquerade is today or it's soon? We just know it's soon?
Just know it's soon.
Iria puts her dress in her bag and puts on her regular clothes because she doesn't want to wash that again. So she's not going to put it on until the masquerade.
Okay, cool. I think you get up and Nix very politely covers his eyes as you streak across the room and get dressed. He scoops up his cloak and puts it back on. Who's closest to Nix right now? Is it Wingatha or is it Tonrir?
I'm going to guess it's me since I approached him.
Okay. He kind of has like a sly smile and then he walks close to you and he holds out the picture he's holding. And it's a little painted portrait of a catfolk man and two, you know, really young catfolks, like little catfolk children. And he smiles and he says, this is my husband, Druin. And these are our kits, Mila and Ashi. I look at this when I'm hunting. It helps me stay focused, and it helps me not give up. I've been hunting the darkest of creatures in the darkest of places for a long time to justify my existence, and I'm tired. Oberon is my last job, the final loose end that I must tie up. And after that, I believe I have earned the peace of a quiet life. Anyone can find something to die for. In my experience, to succeed, you must find something to live for. I hope you have some such thing going into this fight. You're going to need it.
Tonrir looks down at the painted portrait, just making small mental note of just how they look. And upon that, he's reflecting upon the what I would assume is the happy disposition of the subjects in the painting.
Mm-hmm.
And Tonrir says, oh, it is good to live for people. I have learned that I must live for life itself. Everything that blooms, everything that takes root, all of the water that runs between the sands, over the rocks into great cascading waterfalls, everything has a balance. And I, as a druid, am in service to that balance. So, while I do completely understand why you would want to live for your family, I will make sure that I live for that which supports them.
I think Nick smiles a big, toothy, fanged smile, and he claps a cold hand on your shoulder, and he says, it just sounds to me like your family is much bigger. Hmm.
There's a bit of a small smile from Tonrir, but it's marked with just the slightest tinge of, like, sadness at the corner of the eye before he quickly dismisses it and goes back to looking around the room to work on perhaps putting together a costume.
Hey, I have a question.
Yeah, what's up? Prohibition go away yet?
No. Do vampires intrinsically know if someone else is or is not a vampire? Like, do they have a way of sensing that? Via sense of smell or whatever?
Yes. So they intrinsically sense life. But you guys remember that you have that appear undead scroll that was given to you by Vesper. It's a one-time use, but it's specifically designed to allow one of you guys to disguise themselves as a vampire. And it's supposed to, according to Vesper, pass magical detection. The only thing that it's not going to do is if they actually touch you, you will still be warm. And if they actually like look closely, you're going to breathe and have a heartbeat. But besides that, it allows you to pass magical detection. It's basically an inverse of disguise undead, which is designed for vampires, ghouls, creatures like that to be able to pass in public.
Hmm. Okay.
Just to remind you, what else you have? You also have a bottle of sunlight, which if you smash, is going to create a burst of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm going to quick like pop open your guys' quest log real quick because it's been a hot minute since we started this mission. Your guys' mission for Queen Saphira, who is the Queen of Vire, is to bring back one contagious vampire. What you know from your conversation with Vesper and your conversation with Nyx is only fully formed vampires are able to spread the curse. Spawn are not able to because they're basically slaves. But if you kill the main vampire, in this case Oberon, all the spawns become full vampires. So, as via your deal with Nyx, that is the plan. Your plan with Nyx is to kill Oberon, and then he will allow you to take one of the spawn with you. Also, Vesper has asked a favor from you guys. He is interested in developing a cure for vampirism. He's not sure if it can be done, but he's interested in it. And what he's hoping you will do is bring him back an infected individual who is interested in being cured. He has asked that you try to pick someone gentle who's not going to kill everyone in Vire.
Oh.
And that's a little check on your quest log.
Cool.
Cool.
And I'm just, for transparency, you got like a feeling that the masquerade is like going to happen. You got a feeling.
So Tanra is rummaging the room to see if there's any anything that might function as formal robes. Basically.
Well, this chamber was designed for a lady. So there's a woman's wedding. Well, not a woman's. That could be for anybody. There's a wedding dress in the closet that looks like hasn't been worn, but that probably would be a dead giveaway because I bet Oberon would recognize that. There's some nice robes in there, but again, he would probably recognize them. There's also some clothing in his room, but it's his. So.
Mm-hmm.
What if they just shop at the same place? The same vampire store.
He's like, oh my god, I thought I killed that guy after he made my robes.
Yeah, Tanra is thinking aloud and he's going to say, well, he'll probably recognize any of these clothes that are his, but if I am not in his line of sight and instead using it to get through other people, maybe this will work.
Gideon stands up and interrupts this conversation almost like she wasn't paying attention. She was reading her book. And then just stood up and while still looking at her book, asks, does anyone have a spell that can make you cold to the touch?
That was my plan to some extent. I was going to make ice armor.
I have a suggestion of using live bait, or in this case, seemingly undead bait.
I'm listening.
My eyebrows are like in my hairline.
Gideon looks up at Tanrir very seriously and then just like references the book she's been reading and says, no, it's outside information. So I guess the information I asked you earlier, Dre, about like if vampires know about living or not, can I just assume that I got that from reading?
Yeah, you can assume that you got that from reading, from a combination of reading, talking to Nyx, and just like interacting with these vampires. I mean, every vampire you've seen, the second you're in a room with them and you're close to them, they seem to know you're alive.
Okay, so Gideon looks at him and says, from what I've read here, if we use the Appear Undead scroll and we can make me cold to the touch, I'm the only one among any of you lot that has a passable dress. Although it would not be the one I would have chosen had I gotten the choice to pack my own bag. But it should do. And if I am able to distract him, you all can move in for the kill.
So let me get this straight, Gideon. Is your plan to seduce Oberon?
Nyx gives you two thumbs up.
Because I got some tips for you if you need it.
Hello, this is your GM, Dre Silvertooth, and welcome to episode 14 of Bad Heroes. This is part 10 of The Forgotten Court, and guys, I don't have a lot to report today because our last episode came out less than a week ago, so I hope you're enjoying this episode. I don't think we've ever had such a roleplay intensive session, but we all enjoyed it, as you can tell by the unstoppable laughter, and so here's hoping you're enjoying it too. You can find us and new episodes at badheroescast.com or reach us at badheroescast@gmail.com. You can also give us a shout on Twitter at badheroescast. We have a Patreon with extra content if you want to support us. It's got some graphics, some GM notes, bonus episodes for holidays, interviews with the players, and sometimes raw recordings released early ahead of the episodes. We are also working on making some tangible rewards like pins and stickers, stuff like that. So all of that is at patreon.com/badheroes. This show is written and GM'd by me, Dre Silvertooth, brought to life by my co-producer Leanne Rose, and made hilarious and excellent by my players Kaz Ballou, Coolness, and Liska Winter, and also currently Leanne Rose, again, because she's pulling double duty. Music in this episode includes some piano at the end there, which is by our very own Coolness, which I thought was pretty dang cool. Our theme is, as always, Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. And thanks for listening. The next episode comes out on February 5th. See you then.
I do not intend to use anything but my
ass. Sorry.
I do not intend to use any romantic tactics.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Nyx reaches over and slaps Wingatha's arms into the air and keeps slapping Wingatha's arms until she turns them into thumbs up.
Wingatha looks at Nyx and frowns.
So you want to use the scroll for yourself. That point, I don't know that being cold to the touch will be too much of a problem unless you get close. And if you are intent on getting close, then yes, I would need to give you the ice armor.
Well, I can try to refrain from being touched, but I don't know. Hearing what had happened to Thalia, I'm not certain that consent is high on Oberon's priority list.
Well, I can do that. Are there any objections?
Wingatha shrugs and says, this is as good a plan as any.
To be clear, you will have to move in and kill him quickly. I don't want to be there for long. I've already been bitten once.
Nyx, would there be a recognition that Gideon was already bitten?
Let's see. So I think Nyx, just putting together what you guys have described Vesper gave you, walks up and reaches out to move Gideon's hair aside to look at her neck and pauses and says, may I?
Yes.
And he very gently moves her hair aside and looks at her throat. And there are two bite marks on her throat, but they're clean.
If it helps at all. And she, like, goes to her bag and then pulls out the gown that she was intending to wear. Do you want me to describe it?
Yeah.
I like to envision that Gideon's like, if it helps at all, and then she leaves to go get dressed.
Okay, yeah, that.
Or just drops all of her clothes to the floor.
That's probably more likely, actually. She would say, if it helps at all, and then just, like, disrobes.
I think Nyx turns around and he covers his eyes and he leans into Wingatha, who perhaps has also turned around.
Uh-huh.
And leans in and goes, if it helps, what? What is she trying to help?
I don't know.
She's naked and just, like, calmly walks over to her bag and rummages through it and then pulls out.
I just imagine, like, Tonrir and Iria just watching this, like, completely calm, just like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Tonrir having probably danced naked with some elves in the forest. I'm just saying. There's nothing, like, new here.
Well, what's Iria's reaction since we're going around the room, I guess?
Iria's totally fine with it because she grew up among the clan, I guess a different clan than Nyx, because they were just like nudity was normal and like she only uses clothes for other people, not for herself. So
very good. So yeah, Gideon pulls out this really elegant floor length gown that has long lace sleeves and a pretty menacing high necked collar. It's ice blue and it has silver snowflakes patterned up the chest. But she gestures. She's still not dressed. She's just holding it out. And she says, this, and tries to get Nyx to look at the collar.
Nyx, like, turns and, like, peeks through his fingers with a big tiger eye and looks at the dress and is like, okay. Or that's not Nyx's voice. That's my voice. Okay. He got so scared he turned into me. And he was just like, the collar. And looks at the collar. And then he drops his hand and, sort of touches it a little bit and then, like, holds it up to you and then goes, yes, I think this is perfect.
While this is happening, Wingatha has walked away to the door to the hallway and cracks it open to check outside and make sure there isn't any company.
Because we're talking so damn loud.
there's nobody out there. All seems quiet for now.
Okay, she shuts the door again and leans against it.
Tonrir is looking at the gown in question. Is the gown capable of concealing, well, a breastplate, basically?
What is this that you're trying? What is this spell?
Ice armor is, so it wears very much like a breastplate does for armor. And
how thick is it?
Thick.
Thick.
Thick enough to be, I mean, it's
thick with two C's.
It resembles a breastplate, a proper, what a knight would wear. So the thought here is that it's probably going to be too big to wear underneath.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, when you summon it, does it fit the person in question?
Yes. Or, no, sorry. I'm a liar. It's a suit of armor, not just a breastplate, but the breastplate is the... It's a suit of armor.
Hello, I'm here to court.
Clank, clank, clank.
Is it a sexy suit of armor? That's the question.
The one that like exposes the midriff and everything, like in most RPGs, yeah. Fully covers the guy, but as soon as I cast it on a female, it's like a third of the body's covered. That's
just... It's an instant bikini, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Seems good.
To that end, regarding how it fits, I can fit it to the wearer if they are immersed in water, which is why I'm looking at the bathtub.
Good news, you got the right person.
But if it's bulky at all, this won't work.
I mean, not if you get to second base, but if you...
Okay, but I'm not going to get anywhere near second base with this clunky-ass armor bulging out of my dress.
Is that what we're shooting for, second base?
What are the bases? Gideon doesn't know what the bases are.
Jesus Christ. To that end, I think at some expense to the hit points, because it would offer 30 hit points worth of protection.
Good God.
Yeah.
Ooh, she probably needs that, though, because, well, we'll talk hit points in a hot minute, but...
Are you talking about making it thinner and having less hit points that it adds?
Yeah, I don't want to mess with the spell too much. Maybe if you have a cloak that you can wear over it and he could try to make the ice elegant to make it like a fancy thing that's still functional.
A fancy, you know, one of those fancy things.
I think this is a brilliant idea. And if you want to tell me that you make beautiful ice armor, I personally think that sounds really attractive.
So. Yeah, if you are able to make that.
I can make it work. It'll last for 3 hours. That's the other caveat here.
Good Lord.
Fire will affect it.
Gonna throw another Frozen reference in there. Good thing the cold never bothered Gideon anyway.
And if for some reason you do need to swim, you do get buoyancy with it because it's ice.
Cool. Cool. Oh, good. I'll be safe.
I just pictured Gideon spinning like a baby otter, unable to go anywhere.
Just spinning wildly and going, Tanrir, undo the spell.
So do you want to do this then? I guess that's the question.
Oh my God, I forgot where our in-game discussion left off. Okay, I think it was just that Nyx looked over the collar and said, like, yes, this will do. And then you started asking a question. So do you want to say something in character?
Sure. Tanrir looks over the dress and says, I can form the ice armor around it, but not underneath it. To some extent, I could try to make it look a little bit courtly, if you will, so that way you immediately grab his attention. However, if I were to do so, I would imagine you'll get the attention of everybody else as well. I will make sure that it's covering your arms, your legs, your torso, and to some point, your neck. I can make it a little bit of a fancy choker, if you will, but everybody is going to be looking at you.
I think it does well for bait when they are highly noticeable.
If there's no objections, and he looks around the room to see if anybody else has anything to note.
I'll be glad to not be the one walking right into death for once.
Walking straight into death. Not tactically. Just cause.
Just kind of yeeting herself right in there.
Wingatha tilts her head toward Tanrir in agreement.
Okay.
Nyx just nods.
All right. At that point, Tanrir looks and says, let's make sure that everything else that we need is prepped so that the last thing we do is get the armor on so that way we can immediately leave this room.
Okay, great. So
Gideon puts the dress on.
Good job.
Otherwise, I was just naked.
I forgot that this whole conversation happened with Gideon buck-ass naked. And everybody's just, this is just normal now, is apparently two of our party members are at all times naked. Three if Tanrir goes back to the woods.
Hey.
Well, go ahead and talk me through what you guys all do to get ready. So before I put stuff in motion and stuff starts moving, you guys have a little bit of time to get all that together. So everybody tell me what you do. Everybody tell me what you get ready.
Tanrir is just going to look around for the most generic looking cloak that will go over what he's currently wearing. Won't be anything too fancy. And then picks up any belongings and he's done.
Okay. I think you find like some black silk cloaks, just like very plain black silk cloaks. You had sort of a rough spun black cloak from the storeroom. Mm-hmm. When you very first entered the castle and fought your first spawn, you had like a rough spun black cloak, which you know that Oberon will not recognize because it's not his. And then you have a silky black one that's in his room. So It's up to you which one you take.
Does the rough spun one seem passable enough for a masquerade?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that you guys know is if you're close enough that they're looking at the fabric of your cloak, they also know you're alive, so.
Okay, that's fair. I guess he'll tuck the silk one into his satchel, and then he'll take the rough spun one and don it.
Okay.
Cool.
I can't remember. Did Wingatha pick up something from the storeroom?
Wingatha did. Wingatha picked up an even bigger rough spun black cloak, and she picked up one big enough to hide her greatsword slung on her back.
Okay.
With a hood.
All right. Yeah. So Wingatha sheathes her greatsword back across her back and swings that big rough spun cloak around over her shoulders and raises the hood.
Great.
So Gideon takes her time getting dressed in this really fancy gown, making sure to delicately put on the lace sleeves and everything like that, and fastening the collar up where it should be. Her hair's kind of always been in a bun at the base of her neck, braided, but she takes it out and lets her silver hair just kind of down so that she can ruffle it and comb through it again and smooth it out and then braid it back into kind of a similar intricate bun and uses these silver pins to kind of make it more presentable. And the pins have little snowflakes on them.
This is adorable. I like this very much.
Well, Iria is, I guess, going to pull out that dress from her bag. And I think while she's doing this, she's looking at Gideon and kind of blushing because she didn't realize that Gideon could be so gorgeous. So while Gideon is dressing, she's kind of like glancing over and blushing.
Aww. Oh, this is so cute. Oh, God, I love Iria.
And Iria doesn't remember the color of her dress, but she looks for...
Good news. When she looks in her bag, it's teal.
Oh, she suddenly remembers the color teal. And
she got temporarily colorblind, but don't worry, the GM remembers.
Thank God. So she puts it on and then she looks around. So there's Oberon's room and then there's a room next to it that's like for a lady.
Yep, and that's the room you guys were resting in.
Okay. So she's going to look around the room to see if there's any like nondescript but nice looking accessories, like a, what's that thing you put around your neck?
A collar?
A necklace?
Oh. It could, a necklace is one of them, but it's like fluffy.
Fluffy? A scarf. Yes. Are you looking for a scarf?
Yes, a scarf.
It's a it's necklace, fluffy. But fluffy. A fluffy.
It's a fluffy necklace.
Oh my God.
So she's looking for maybe a black one, something that'll like won't be noticeable but will add a little bit of,
trying to get like a shawl or like,
yeah a shawl. What is a shawl?
Yeah, it's the thing that goes kind of around their shoulders and drapes down their arms.
Oh yes, perfect, a shawl.
You know, the fluffy necklace type.
You find like a black silk shawl. You find a red one. That's probably not going to match.
I mean, that could go together. It would be noticeable though.
Red and teal?
Yeah. Oh, God. I had a red and teal house.
What?
It was a lot though.
It was a lot there.
So I would be like, I'm trying to be the demanding presence here, but everyone's eyes would actually turn to Iria.
Yeah. Well, so she looked, she picks it up and she's like, huh? Yeah. And then she's like, probably not. Maybe another time. She puts it in her backpack.
Oh, you're just like jacking clothes from this.
Yeah. And then she grabs the black one and she puts it around her shoulders. She's like, huh, yes, perfect.
I mean, add this stuff to your inventory, guys.
Oh, speaking of.
You barbarians.
She puts it in her backpack and then she remembers suddenly that she has all this stuff. So she's digging around in her backpack and she pulls out that bottle of sunlight and kind of sets it down. And then pulls out the Appear Undead scroll, and she daintily hands it to Gideon.
Roll for it.
What?
How do scrolls work in this game?
I believe there's an incantation on them, and you read it aloud. But a spellcaster, like a competent spellcaster, has to read it. So
not me.
Does it work off of wisdom or off of intelligence?
Well, it's based on the class, I think. Whatever the scroll caster's class is. Right?
This is an illusion. It's a glamour. And the casting time is one standard action, and the range is touch. And it lasts 24 hours.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Well, I don't want to... Okay, that's fine. Okay, so what she'll do is Gideon will notice that the cat is holding out a scroll, and she'll just kind of turn while fixing up the pins in her hair and like adjusting various parts of her gown and fixing her necklace and whatnot. She'll just kind of turn with curious eyes, look at the scroll, look at Iria, take the scroll from Iria, and then immediately turn around and hand it to Tonmir.
Okay.
Iria goes back and grabs the bottle of sunlight and is looking at it and goes back over to Gideon and Tonmir and holds it up and says, I think we can do something with this.
More than likely. Although we should make sure that each of these things are distributed evenly amongst us. It would be a shame for us to put all of our eggs in one basket.
How does this bottled sunlight work?
Nyx holds out his hand.
Iria gives it to Nyx.
And then Gideon specifies, specifically, exactly how lethal is it? And how does one have to expose one of these undead to it?
Nyx looks it over.
This is bottled sunlight. Weak evocation. Difficult to brew. Someone powerful made this for you. It is useful hunting vampires, certainly. It will not kill them, but it will push them back.
Basically, in game terms, they're going to get to do a will saving throw. And if they succeed, then the vial is extinguished. If they don't succeed, then that burst of sunlight is going to be there for basically a day. It's not going to kill them, but it's going to basically make them back off. So if like a swarm of vampires were coming at you and you smashed it on the ground, they're all going to fall back.
Only if they all do the will saving throw? Like, that's what I'm wondering.
I mean, I would do one will saving throw for the group, basically.
Okay. Because if one of them got it, then...
Yeah, that would be unfair. I would do one saving throw.
Okay.
Pretty good odds that what it's going to do is make them back off. So it's a good, like, last-ditch effort and, like, kind of a good escape.
How big is this bottle?
Where are you going to put it?
That's what I'm wondering.
It's an orb. It's the size of a baseball.
Fuck me.
I mean...
No, don't. Is there any kind of way that Gideon could have it strapped to her leg, like underneath the gown?
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you could rig something, you know, just take some fabric and make a little makeshift thigh holster.
Okay.
Somebody here is probably industrious enough for that.
Gideon's going to take the bottled sunlight and say, if it's all right with everyone else, I think I'll hang on to this just in case things don't go our way.
Hmm. We can work with that, but do remember you have the armor to contend with.
This is true.
I'll make it work.
Iria also pulls out her magical lipstick and hands it to Gideon. Would you like this?
Oh, boy. Does this work on undead? I don't care. It works on undead. I say so.
Gideon looks at Iria very seriously and says, I will have to repeat myself. I do not intend on getting close enough for any sort of romantic entanglement.
Nobody ever intends to get close enough for a romantic entanglement. It just happens.
What parties do you go to?
The good ones.
How do we get an invite?
Right. Also, do I need to reiterate eggs in one basket? And he points between the bottle of sunlight and the lipstick.
Give that to someone else who's, I guess, more loose with their lips.
Tonray immediately shakes his head.
Nyx holds up a finger, and he's laughing a little bit, and he says, now. Now. What if we all put on some of the purple lipstick? And then we were all prepared.
Iria very seriously says, that's such a good idea. And starts putting it on.
All right, well, Nyx waits his turn and then puts on purple lipstick. Does it work like that? I say it does. I don't give a shit. It works like that.
What if two people wearing the magical lipstick kiss each other? What happens?
God help them.
Because this is a charm thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mild charm person spell, so.
If you're both wearing the lipstick and you kiss each other, you both just sit there complimenting each other over and over.
I like it. Charm person, one standard action, lasts 1 hour per level. There's a will saving throw. Oh my god, the subdomain is slavery. I feel bad about giving you this now.
Well, I mean, it could be useful.
Yeah. let's see. This charm makes a humanoid creature regard you as its trusted friend and ally. If the creature is currently being threatened or attacked by you, it receives a +5 bonus on its saving throw. So if you stab it and then kiss it, you're going to have to take a penalty.
You got some splaining to do.
Damn, Skippy. This spell does not enable you to control the charm person, but it perceives your words and actions in the most favorable possible way.
Nice.
An affected creature will obviously not obey orders that are harmful to itself, but it might be convinced to do something dangerous if it is worth doing. Or just not eat you, you know.
Real quick.
Yo.
Have some flavor.
Oh, gimme.
Calm down.
I love flavor.
So Gideon, seeing this lipstick offered up to everyone, just kind of turns on her heel and walks back to her bag and digs out Undead Adventures and Romance and starts reading it for flirting advice.
Inspiration.
Good. Oh, boy. Well, what you read... Oh, boy.
Does it skip the flirting part?
Oh, boy.
Because you have to remember, she literally knows nothing about anything related to...
Anything, yeah.
...that realm of intimacy.
Okay. There's a lot of heaving of chests.
Yes, and she's soaking this up. Like, she's like, yes.
Heave the chest, yes.
Got it. Interesting.
Does she start practicing heaving the chest?
Because Iria is watching for that. There's a lot of talk about, like, love at first sight. This concept that you see someone and you instantly know that you want to be with them till you die. Or, I guess, for the rest of your dead life.
Yeah. Gideon, after seeing all the sappy, like, poems and seeing the love note and everything that Oberon had written, is like, this is exactly what I'll need for this encounter.
Perfect. Yeah, it's the sappiest possible stuff.
Tonmir will hear, this is exactly what I need. And he was like doing something else. And he's going to look back and see the title of the book in hand and just pause for a second, quirk an eyebrow, and then go back to what he was doing.
Yeah, that's good flavor. All right, so...
Wingatha at this point has sat back down in the chair that she slept in and is sharpening one of the stakes that she had pulled out from her rambrace.
Did she have anything to add in about whether or not she's going to wear the lipstick?
She looks at it and says, I'll pass.
Meanwhile, Erie's just slathering it on.
Really goes well with my teal dress.
It does not go well with Nyx's tiger stripes. And it's not because he's a dude, because dudes can pull that off, but he is like an orange tiger, so it looks very... It's no good.
I also have a shard of mirror that I used on that thrall, so Iria takes out that shard of mirror and just like looks at herself putting on the lipstick and then hands it to Nyx so he can look at himself.
He looks and cringes and then just gives the mirror back. Okay, anything else? Or is it mechanics o'clock?
I think if it's mechanics o'clock, we need to get the ice armor on.
Right. Okay, hang on. Let's figure out how much everyone's rested, and then we'll do that on our way out. So...
Yeah, because on our way out, Tonra has to baptize me, basically.
Oh, boy. Okay, so everybody rested for a full sleep. So... If I understand this correctly, with a full night's rest, 8 hours of sleep, you recover 1 hit point per character level. So everybody's going to get 3 hit points back. So Iria, you had ability damage, you had constitution damage, but you had a potion of minor restoration and that fixed it. Gideon still had constitution damage from when Thalia bit her. So you had 4 points of constitution damage. So you heal 1 point of ability damage because you rested for 8 hours. So that takes it down to 3.
Mm-hmm.
3 points of ability damage counts as 1 level.
Mm-hmm.
So you are now going to take a -1 on all constitution-based checks instead of -2. And your max hit points are going to be down 3 hit points instead of down 6. So you feel significantly better than you did yesterday.
Okay.
Wingatha, you have a... negative level because the spawn did a energy drain on you. So I'm going to need you to make a saving throw.
Okay.
And if you pass, then you can get your negative level back, which would be good because if you remember, the energy drain is what has you, you're doing a -1 on like everything you do,
mm-hmm.
which is a real pain in the butt.
A real drag.
Mm-hmm. Okay, give me a fortitude saving throw.
Okay. I rolled a 3 plus 5 or 8.
-1, so 7. So no, your negative level stays with you.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So Gideon's feeling a little bit better. Wingatha feels about the same. And everybody gained 3 hit points overnight. What is everybody's hit points at?
I'm at 11.
Out of how many?
My total was 17, but I have the 3 taken off of that, so 14. And then I had 3 remaining damage.
So you were at 11 before you rested.
Yeah.
And then you gained 3 back because you healed the ability damage. And then you also gained 3 to your current hit points back because you rested. So you're probably at 14 out of 14. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So 14 out of 14 for you, Gideon. Okay. Okay, Iria, what's up with you?
I don't know. I'm really confused about, and I think you explained this to me before, and I just, it left my brain, so.
Good news. I texted it to you because I was afraid of this. So your max was down to 11. Your max with sleep, because you got 1 point of constitution damage taken off, you are back up to 14. So you're back up to your max of 14.
Okay.
Which is great. And your current hit points are, I believe, 8. Oh, no, you were at 8 last episode. So you're going to gain 3 more. So you're at 11 out of 14.
All right. Then I was right. I got confused with, like, was it constitution damage and ability damage?
That's the same thing. A constitution is a type of ability damage. Because it's like ability damage is like a damage on a particular ability. And this ability is constitution.
Okay.
All right. Tanrir, where are you at?
I think... I can't recall if I was down 4 points or 3 points from the last session. Because if it was 3, then I would have healed that fully.
Sure. What is your max?
29.
All right, so you are either at 28 or 29 hit points right now. Leanne, I don't suppose you know. It wouldn't be your fault if you didn't, because you did not play Wingeth that last episode.
The only thing marked here is that the original total hit points was 31, but then dropped to 26 due to the negative level. But I don't know how much damage Wingatha took.
Oh, like so much, I think. Because Wingatha did a lot of wild shit last episode. We'll figure that out later, and whatever it is, it's going to be +3 because you rested.
Okay.
So that's a problem for future us, but it's going to be +3 to whatever the current was out of 26. Okay, so we've done all the shopkeeping. So everybody is feeling better after their sleep. You guys have formulated a loose plan. And suddenly you guys all hear something. It's like a distant clattering, like a distant echo that's going throughout the castle. And it takes you a moment to realize that it's bats. Swarms and swarms of bats. And the beats of their wings and the clattering of their voices echoes off the flagstone and fills the otherwise silent castle. And Nick holds up his hands and closes his eyes and says, "It's him. They're back."
Gideon rushes to the bathtub.
Yep. Time to get the armor done.
Seems good.
So Tonry's going to guide Gideon into the bathtub, which has been filled up with enough water. The spell requires 5 gallons. And for the moment, the dress is going to be soaked until the water is pulled from that and made into the armor itself.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, so Gideon, you are helped down into this partially filled bath, and you sink down into the water, fully dressed in your beautiful court gown, and then Tanrir begins to cast over you.
The armor works onto the legs under the hem of the skirted part of her gown, ensuring the legs are protected. The core of the effort is on her torso, where the armor slopes in lines downward toward the floor. The lines taper the torso inward to help with the slimming look, despite how much bulk it has. The crowning piece is with the gorget, which extends up from the armor around the neck and is away from the neck just enough to allow the head to turn. But from under the jawline, icicles extend upward on the sides of the head in a menacing but impressive manner. Her hair is able to work between the 3 spikes on each side.
Well, damn. Gideon gets out of the tub in all her glory. And everybody in the room starts sweating. Ha 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 ha!